Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Hackers are after your business data. I can help. I am Vi, the virtual intelligence assistant at Virtual Armor.
Virtual Armor, partnered with Juniper Networks, provides cybersecurity services and end-to-end solutions to keep what's yours, yours. Defend yourself with managed firewall and managed SIM essential core services that are economical and efficient. Virtual Armor goes beyond just initial alerting to provide a thorough report on threats, vulnerabilities, and results.
Let me help protect you. Contact me at justaskvi. That's vi.com.
Sports Radio FNZ. Kyle Bailey with you here in the clubhouse on this Thursday morning. Reacting to last night's NBA draft, and I would say big thanks to Coach Matt Daugherty for hanging out with us, but he's not done hanging out with us. His schedule cleared up, so he's sticking around for a while, and I can't imagine a better break of luck for a guy with his basketball expertise to be able to stick around here during this show in particular. Longtime Tar Heel, national champion, former head coach, and these days, of course, an ACC network analyst. And we were just talking about the Hornets draft class in totality. LaMelo Ball is the centerpiece of it, but a lot of us, especially liking the Vernon Carey pick at 32, Grant Riller is very interesting at 56. And Coach, I noticed last night, first of all, John Calipari is, we talk about LaMelo Ball being a polarizing figure. John Calipari is a pretty polarizing guy in college basketball. Would you agree?
Yeah. Okay, pretty polarizing guy. Yeah.
The one thing I feel very comfortable saying about John Calipari is that dude loves his players. Mm-hmm. He's a great promoter, and he goes to great lengths even after his guys are gone to promote the players that he has graduated into the NBA. And I use graduated loosely there, but, you know, sends to the NBA. And he was out last night with a bullhorn championing Nick Richards. Now, they had a noticeable lack of the usual lottery picks from Kentucky last night, but still, I mean, he was trumpeting Nick Richards from the mountaintop to anybody who would listen, you know, saying this kid's a special player. The Hornets just got a great one. What do you think?
Yeah, well, first of all, John is a good recruiter, a good promoter, but he's also a good basketball coach. And I coached against John several times as an assistant when he was at UMass, and then as a head coach when he was at Memphis. He's a good coach, you know, and that's a scary combination when a guy can recruit and coach. And so I have a lot of respect for John. He does promote his players, but he's tough on his players, and he's honest with his players. And then the players that go through that program earn his trust, and he promotes them. And I don't think he overpromotes them. I think he, you know what you're going to get. I think John will tell him, hey, I'm not going to lie about you, because that's my reputation on the line with these NBA people.
Yeah.
So I admire what he does and how he does it. I'm a Nick Richards fan. I think he got lost in the shuffle a little bit at Kentucky because they have so many good players. And, you know, he's not a overly skilled guy. He is a big man who can run, rebound, block shots. And I think, you know, to get him in the second round, again, like Vernon Carey, is a steal.
He's a guy that I would expect to spend a lot of time in Greensboro with the Swarm. That's an area where they've shown, I think, a great deal of competence over the past two seasons, running the guys like Devontae and the Martin twins and Jalen McDaniels and, you know, players like that back and forth up and down 85 between the Hornets and the Greensboro Swarm for developmental reasons to get the minutes in the G League. I expect to see a lot of him there. But, man, his production, Nick Richards, that is, jumped big time in his junior season at Kentucky. Spent 3 years there, you know, was a teammate of PJ Washington's. He's 6'11", to Coach's point. They went, I was going to say back-to-back, that's not true, because the Pelicans drafted Nick Richards 42nd overall, but the Hornets gave up a future second-round pick to make that swap. But what they ended up with last night was a 6'10 Vernon Carey, a 6'11 Nick Richards, and then taking Grant Riller with the final pick, 56th overall. But Coach and I were talking about it earlier. You now have a 6'10 Vernon Carey, 6'11 Nick Richards, a 6'11 Jalen McDaniels out of San Diego State last year, you know, to go along with a couple of veteran bigs who may or may not be there too much longer. Last night, Coach, I bring all this up to say, James Borrego said we're going to be playing a lot of positionless basketball this year. when you look at this roster and you hear James Borrego say, we're going to be playing a lot of positionless basketball. Not only what does that mean, I think we understand the gist, but what does that mean in the context of this roster?
Well, everyone's playing positionless basketball. I mean, and quite frankly, I think the NBA was a late adopter of it because we were doing that in college early because all the really good bigs were going pro. So we had a smaller game. So we were playing four out and five out back in when I was coaching at UNC. I always put a premium on guys that could pass, handle, and shoot the ball. And that morphed into the NBA when Draymond Green became a really effective player at the four spot for Golden State, and he could switch all ball screens. He could get the rebound and start the break. He improved his jump shot, and everyone starts talking about positionless basketball. And so, where five guys or four can pass, handle, and shoot the ball with speed, quickness, and toughness and savvy. And that's what I talk about when I look for players, those seven qualities. And so what does that roster look like? To me, it does look like P.J. Washington. It looks like Graham. It looks like Ball. And it looks like the kid out of Michigan State.
Miles Bridges.
Bridges.
Who may or may not be a trade piece before it's all said and done.
I've always liked Bridges. So now you put those four players on the floor with a big that can screen and roll, guard pick and roll. You've got a pretty darn good, talented young roster.
In this Eastern Conference, too. Now, we've seen some guys move east, right? LeBron moved west, and a lot of guys are now moving east. So I think the balance of power in the Eastern Conference has been changing in front of us for the past couple of weeks and several months even. But the roster we're looking at right now, we've talked about the sort of logjam in the backcourt. Malik Monk, Terry Rozier, Devontae Graham, and now LaMelo Ball. I think there's got to be an odd man out. You and I both agree that Terry Rozier is probably the likeliest candidate for that to happen. They signed him to that $19+ million a year deal last year, and I think he was money well spent, at least in the production, and that would make him a lot more attractive to other teams in a potential trade.
Yeah, that's the thing. You got to have value. Does he have value in the open market? You got to find the suitor. You got to find somebody to dance with. So if they can, I think that's a logical person to move because he is a ball dominant guard who. I don't think he's a great outside shooter. He shoots a hard ball, I call it. And I think that you can mix Graham and Ball in the backcourt with Ball on the ball, offensively and off the ball defensively, kind of like they did a little bit with Steph Curry and the shooter,
Klay Thompson. What a tough break for him, by the way.
Yeah,
I mean, that's an easy kind of pivot or segue there. We don't know too much about it at this point. Rumors started to trickle out. Reports trickled out last night that Klay Thompson had suffered a tough right leg injury in a workout in Southern California, and slowly news started to come out that it was very likely an Achilles injury to his right foot. This is a year, not even a year, after missing the entire season to a torn ACL that he suffered in the NBA Finals. I put it out last night before the Warriors picked James Wiseman second overall, that the Thompson pick could have just changed the course of NBA history on draft night. I don't know if that was in fact the case since they did take, James Wiseman. If they'd taken LaMelo Ball, I think that would have been a message sent, or at least a different path. But the fact that they took James Wiseman doesn't necessarily mean it changed the course of history, but it's certainly interesting. And you hate to see that happen to any player in the NBA, especially a guy as talented as Klay Thompson. Now, I want to go back to something. The basketball fits, the rotations, the roster. It's a little bit difficult to envision exactly what this opening night roster is going to look like until we get through free agency, and see what deals materialize that Mitch Kupchak will take advantage of. Again, I think we'll see a deal, a free agency acquisition of some kind, maybe nothing huge, but Mitch has talked about the things that they'll do. We got a ways to go until this roster rounds into form, but as I look to what they have, and in the context of the East, I mean, they won 23 games last year in a shortened season. They weren't supposed to win that many games. This is a team that I think if they make the next right moves here in the next couple of weeks, they can be in contention for the Eastern Conference playoffs this year.
Yeah, no, I think so. It's a crazy season. One of the crazy things is, there's no summer league.
Right.
I mean, there's a limited training camp and no summer league. So these players are going to be thrown into the fire quickly. And I think, what is their maturity level? What is their background? And as you look at these new players, you know, LaMelo Ball should be able to adapt pretty quickly. He's seen a lot, you know, and so nothing should be really too outlandish for him, especially I lean on the older brother thing. Like, that's got to be a valuable resource mm-hmm. for him. And then, you know, Vernon Carey obviously comes from a good program in Duke. So how quickly can these guys assimilate to the NBA without a summer league?
Yeah, I there are a lot of questions still to be answered, but last night was representative to me anyway of exactly what Mitch has been telling us they're going to do. Slow, gradual build, accumulate talent, you know, do things the right way, the smart way, lay a foundation, you know, so that even if you don't get everything right, you're better able to absorb or correct mistakes that you make along the way, as opposed to being absolutely hamstrung by bad contracts, veteran deals that set back your franchise multiple years. They played the game last night. You know, they played the rumor mill game. There were things out there. They might trade up to go get Wiseman. Oh, the Hornets could do this. The Hornets are talking about Russell Westbrook. Mitch, I think, did a very, very good job last night playing that game in the top three, the way that teams have to play that game. But then ultimately, when it didn't fall to them, and I have to assume we'll talk to Mitch Kupchak coming up in 45 minutes, things just didn't fall to them in a way that made sense, and they stuck to the plan, and I think they should be applauded for that.
Well, he's a disciplined guy. I mean, Mitch's background has always been discipline, 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 and he is not going to be swayed by outside forces. I mean, listen, the guy worked in one of the most intense markets in the world in L.A. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mitch has the ability to put the blinders on, close the doors. I mean, he even... I've heard this. I don't know if he did it this year, but, you know, tells the guys to put their cell phones in a bucket before they go into the war room on draft day.
Yeah.
He doesn't want anybody, no outside influence.
Funny, that's one of the first stories I was told about Mitch when he first got to Charlotte, you know, by an executive over there that just thought the world of him, you know, had an office next door to him. He said, look, I love him. He's a great guy to have in the building. I work next door to him, and he tells me nothing. Mm. And if we have to go into a meeting, he puts our cell phones outside, mm. you know, so that nothing gets out, you know, in terms of his war room, his plan. Mm. That's the way Mitch is. He's very, very proprietary in that way. Texter says, KB, what do you think happens with Malik Monk? I think he gets a lot of minutes this year. I think they play him a lot. Because Mitch Kupchak, I'll put it this way. Mitch means what he says. As he said multiple times in the past 6 to 12 months, that he still believes Malik Monk is the most talented player on that roster. And maybe now they think it could be LaMelo Ball in terms of pure talent, but up until last night, Mitch had been saying, he'd been insistent, that Malik Monk was the most talented player on their roster. And up until his suspension, the final 15 games before his suspension back early in the spring, Malik Monk was finally, coach, starting to look like the Malik Monk they hoped they were getting on draft night.
Yeah, well, talent is a blessing and a curse.
Right.
You know, as you were saying, most talented player in a roster, immediately a guy named Darius Miles came to mind. And people may not remember Darius Miles, but one of the most talented players coming out of high school and played in the NBA, but never achieved his potential. So talent, potential, is a blessing and a curse. You know, can you live up to that? Yeah, Malik Monk is a very talented player. But will he defend? Will he take care of the ball? Will he be an efficient offensive player? Will he gain strength? You know, I mean, there's a lot of ifs there.
I think incrementally we can say yes to this point, but it's about consistency. You know, potential has to turn into production. Otherwise, you're just another guy who could have been something great
right.
in the NBA. Coach Matt Daugherty's in studio with us. He's hanging around for another basically 2 hours, and we're thrilled about it. When we come back, we'll take a brief break from the NBA draft talk, and we will chat as we do each Thursday morning with another Tar Heel. I'm inundated with Tar Heels this morning. Michael Felder, stadium college football analyst. We'll talk about the Heels and the big weekend ahead in college football with Mike Felder next here in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ.
Sports Radio FNZ.
Live from Charlotte every weekday and now heard around the world on the radio.com app.
It's the Mac Attack. This is Sports Radio FNZ.
Big day in the Queen City. Big, big day. LaMelo Ball, the Ball family coming back to Charlotte. You know, former Carolina Panther LeVar Ball, his offspring LaMelo coming to Charlotte. Third overall pick. We'll get back to chopping it up with Coach Matt Daugherty, who is in studio for the next little bit here in about 20 minutes. And Mitch Kupchak, president of basketball operations and GM of your Charlotte Hornets. He joins me coming up in about 40 minutes at noon. So literally 40 minutes from now, Mitch Kupchak joins us here in the clubhouse, and we will break down all the decisions that were made last night in the draft. But right now, as I said, we stick to the plan. Every Thursday morning, we chop it up with one of college football's finest, one of North Carolina and Charlotte's finest, Mike Felder, college football analyst with Stadium on Twitter at In the Bleachers. He is back with us on the Technicom hotline. Mike Felder, how you doing this morning, buddy?
Man, I'm doing all right. How you doing?
I'm doing good. We played some audio right there of Ray Tanner, which I want to get to here in just a moment. But as a Charlotte guy, I know you're college football through and through, and you know that's what you focus on. But you're a Charlotte guy. You know a thing or two about the Hornets. What do you think about LaMelo Ball coming to Charlotte?
I think it's obviously going to make people pay attention to Charlotte, which is something that's been a problem ever since the revamp, whether it was Bobcats or the Hornets now. And, you know, the reason why, and I know he's gone now, but Kemba Walker didn't get as much probably praise as he should have got across the NBA is because folks, Charlotte's a small market team and people don't pay attention to them. And so when you have a name like LaMelo Ball and you have the idea that you get a guy that nationally moves the meter, I think it's going to be good for them. Maybe he can be their, you know, sort of Cam Newton in terms of helping them reach new heights, but also helping people pay attention that ordinarily wouldn't pay attention to this team because they are looking to build something. And obviously it doesn't matter what you build. I think that's important too, but it does kick off with having someone that people are going to pay attention to.
Yeah, agreed. All right, let's get back to the college football. We've been talking about Will Muschamp for the last week straight, and certainly since Sunday's decision to let him go. You and I have touched on this subject a lot throughout this college football season. Neither of us expected to see much in the way of coaching changes, but South Carolina clearly did the math and said that they expected to lose more money by keeping him, you know, because of fan apathy and everything else, than they would stand to lose, you know, than by letting him go and paying that $13.2 million buyout. What do you think of that decision ultimately, and what do you think is next?
Woo, a lot of money for folks that are telling us that we're suffering and we don't have the money, and they found it. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens next. I've already seen people say we need an offensive guy, obviously trying to harken back to the, not just the Spurrier days, but the temperature in college football right now, the climate, if you will, is all offensive for offense first, offense first, offense first. And so I think that the goal for them should be to hire the best guy, not the flashiest guy. It's going to be interesting to see what they're looking for, right? Like if you're going offense forward, does that mean you're looking at Hugh Freeze? Is that what that means? And I also think it's interesting to see how they make this work, because it's not just that you have to pay his buyout because you did fire him. He didn't get a new job. You're probably going to have to pay somebody else's buyout too. And from a financial standpoint, I mean, obviously we talk about donations and all those things, which is how athletic departments really make a lot of their money, but that's going to be that's a lot of money if they hire someone who's actually good.
Yeah, no, I think you make a point. If there's anybody else out there, you know, I think Andy Staples wrote a good piece about this earlier this week, about the calculation and about how maybe they've, you know, broken the seal on doing something that some other schools were thinking about, but maybe the decision was tough. The PR is not something they might have wanted to deal with. They might have broken a seal here. If there's another coach or two that you think should be worried now as a result of the Muschamp firing, who would that be?
Well, and the logical answer at least feels like Jim Harbaugh, because he has not – oh, they're bad this year. I think Franklin also becomes a question because from a cultural standpoint, there are a lot of folks that aren't fans of his that are already at State College. And also the fact that they are 0-4 right now would give them the necessary way to be able to kind of push him out. But, man, I am, like, looking around. I don't think that there's anyone that should feel like that. Like, going into the season, everybody had Clay Helton on their short list, but he's won two games. They've been very close games. They could easily be 0-2. They've played 3 minutes of winning football, essentially, but that was to get them over the hump. So I think that nationally, outside of Harbaugh and Franklin, I think everybody else is kind of stand your ground. Let's keep doing this. Let's see what happens a year from now. Although, oh, and let's throw Tom Herman's name in there too, because Texas loses this week. If Texas doesn't finish out the upcoming weeks in a good way, not just this week, but going forward, certainly folks are going to be looking at him thinking, what are we doing?
Mike Felder, Stadium, college football analyst. He's with us on the Technicom hotline. Carolina Carolina Wake this past weekend was blackout drunk by the end of the first quarter, and it was amazing to watch. 112 combined points, 1,350 combined yards. We know Carolina's defense is still broken, but you know they've won the state championship. They've won some games since the bad loss to Florida State. They should be in the top 25 this week. They're the first in the others receiving votes category. Has Max stabilized this thing? What do you see for them the rest of the way?
It's really tough to say anything is stabilized when your defense plays the way they do.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, is Texas stabilized right now? We just talked about Tom Herman on the hot seat because they gave up, 50-something points to Texas Tech. And they have a very similar defensive issue to UNC. And UNC's issue is their front four requires help. When your front four requires help, that means slants, that means stunts, that means blitzes. That means you leave yourself vulnerable to things, and Wake Forest took advantage of it. And we've seen other teams take advantage of it. We saw Florida State, I think I saw a thing. I saw a little graphic during the game. Since the UNC game, they had only scored 21 points. And I was like, whoa, they scored more than that in the first half. So it's I don't know that stabilizes the right thing. I think they recognize who they are. And let's be real. They're a Big 12 team that's played in the ACC. They are a points. They are very similar to, not on the same talent level, but they're very similar to Florida, where we have to score, otherwise we will lose. And you can win games against teams that way, but it's always going to make your heart really race, as you mentioned.
Mike, I want to touch on this while I'm thinking about it. I mean, I'm looking at this weekend's schedule right now. Ole Miss, Texas A&M, postponed. Georgia Tech, Miami, postponed. Charlotte, Marshall, postponed. Texas and Kansas, postponed. Louisiana, Central, Arkansas. Those are just the games featuring ranked teams. We've seen a huge uptick in canceled and postponed games in the past 2 weeks. I think we can now tack on Maryland and Michigan State to that list. Mm-hmm. What do you say to those? And there are some increasingly vocal people out there saying they just need to call off the rest of the college football season. What is your response to people who make that claim, that assertion?
Yeah, it's trending that way right now. And the crazy part is, and this is probably where the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are going to be like, see, look, guys. This is why we said we weren't going to play in the first place. But it feels like what you're seeing, and they told us, right? The scientists, the doctors, they said, when we get into cold and flu season, we're going to see a second spike, and we're seeing the second spike. And now the second spike, people don't remember this, but in the first spike, we just canceled everything. Baseball, done. Basketball, done. Everything, college and pro, all done until we figured out what we were going to do in the interim, and then they did that. With football, this is the first time football's actively been involved in the spike from a game standpoint. But remember, in the first spike of the coronavirus, they canceled spring. Spring over. Training camp over. Not doing any of this stuff. So we're in the second wave of that. And, no, I understand why people are saying that. I think that the interesting part is going to be how teams navigate this, because now here's the reality. And I saw the NFL, every team is under COVID protocol at this point. So what I'm looking at is, obviously, it's worse for the Pac-12 or the Big Ten because they don't have the amount of games that you probably want to have for them to be able to play in the playoff. But I also look at it, if you're an SEC or ACC or Big 12 team, and the reality for them is, hey, man, we got to figure out how to make sure we keep our ship tight so that we don't run off course. And that's up to each individual school and each individual conference. And you look at the Pac-12 now, and they're starting to get so worried about the amount of games their teams are playing that they are thinking about opening up what was going to be just a Pac-12 bubble to allow them to play other teams, which that's great for BYU, but that might not be so great for the other teams that you're playing. So this is all, it's all a mess. I mean, for anyone, whether you think the virus is over, or you don't think it's over, or you're like, hey, you need to mask up and stay at home, or I don't want to wear a mask. anyone can look at this and see that it is a mess. And I think at the end of the day, we do need to call it what it is. It's a mess.
No doubt. Mike, last thing I'll let you go here. Clemson back in action this weekend. Noon game in Tallahassee at Doak Campbell Stadium. And 6 years ago, hell, 4 or 5 years ago, it was unthinkable to believe that Clemson, would, as good as they've been, would go into Doak Campbell Stadium as 35.5-point favorites. That's the spread in this game on Saturday. There's a front page story on ESPN right now about the fall of Florida State football. I've never seen a program, you know, fall the way that they have in this short period of time. 6 years ago, they were the top of the college football world, and right now they've dug a hole so deep that I'm not sure they can see out of it. How bad a shape is Florida State in right now? Can Mike Norvell fix it, and do you think he'll have time to fix it?
I don't know if he's going to have time to answer the last question first. Don't know if they're going to give him the time. They're angry and they're frustrated, and more specifically, they're embarrassed. And I'll expand on this, right, if you give me a little bit of time.
Sure.
So here's the thing. Florida State is – we also had never seen a program come to prominence the way that Florida State came to prominence. They were a nobody. You hire Bowden. They go on the road warriors. They take on that road warrior mentality, right? We'll play anybody, anywhere, anytime. We'll show you how good we are. So they did that, and it worked out really well. So what you have is a younger fan base than most college football fan bases and a younger group of college – a younger group in terms of college football than – the blue bloods, Michigan, your Michigans, your Alabamas, your Ohio States, right? They weren't good at the same time. So they burst onto the scene. Most of these people that love Florida State, the most vocal Florida State fans, they don't know a time when Florida State wasn't that good. They don't know about it. They don't know it exists. But Florida State gave rise to Boise State and gave rise to Virginia Tech and then gave rise to Oregon. They were a trailblazer in that regard. And so what you're dealing with are people who don't understand not being good. No, they don't get. There's no ebb. There's no flow. There's just win. There's only win. And so you have that, and then you have the proliferation of college football, where it used to be if you're in Florida, there's Florida, there's Florida State, there's Miami. You go to one of those three schools if you're the best player there, and that's all you do. Maybe you go to Alabama. Maybe you go to Nebraska. Maybe you go to Ohio State, but you usually go there. But then all of a sudden, oh, wow, I can watch teams from other places, and they seem cool, and I can take visits everywhere else, and that seems cool. So you're not going to get the – so Florida State is fighting a battle of everybody getting into Florida to take players that they want. They're fighting a battle of having to go elsewhere to find players, which is really tough. And then they're fighting a battle of team discipline, team culture, this level of – and I'm not even going to use the word entitlement.
Yeah.
What I think is the idea that because I'm good enough to go here, we should be good enough to win – and it's not that they don't work hard, because they do. Every person that plays college football works hard. I understand that. But what I am going to say is they don't understand the team dynamic of all of this, and that's a massive problem. And then obviously you throw in the injuries, you throw in that the fact that it's really tough to get offensive linemen out of the state of Florida. It's really tough.
Yes.
It's hard. There's not a lot of them there. You don't recruit offensive linemen in Florida. You recruit offensive linemen in Texas or in Ohio or in Pennsylvania. So you got to get out and go do that, except those kids probably going to end up going to Ohio State or going to go to Penn State or they're going to go to wherever. So there's a lot of layers here. And as someone who considers himself at least a dynamic thinker about this sport, they have multiple things stacked up against them. And then you mix in the fact that they have, as I mentioned at the top, this younger fan base, right? They don't have the moneyed fan base that other programs have.
Yeah.
They don't have a T. Boone Pickens. They don't have those things. And when you have that, and then let's remember, they don't have historically, I believe it was a women's college, which means they historically don't have the money. So it's really tough. They were a young upstart. It was hard. And that's not something bad about women. It's saying that at that stage in history in America, women weren't getting money jobs to give back to them.
No doubt. Mike, I'm up against it. I got to jump, buddy. I'm sorry. No, you're good. You're exactly right about all this, man. We appreciate you as always. We'll dive back in next week, brother. Thank you for the time as always. Be well.
Sounds good.
It's all right. Michael Felder, I love him. We could do that all day. That's a podcast waiting to happen. Speaking of Florida State and Charlotte, a cool connection last night that came directly after the Hornets pick at 3. We'll talk about it next with Coach Matt Daugherty. West Charlotte Lions, stand up. I think you know what I'm talking about. You're in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ.
Sports Radio FNZ.
The NFL plays here exclusively every Monday, Thursday, and Sunday nights.
He drives! It is a touchdown! It is a touchdown!
We are Charlotte.
Sports Radio FNZ.
Kane is in the building. is wanting the shot. Gone! Game over! DeLong looking, gonna go deep, has his man wide open. It's Muhammad to the 15.
Let's see who balled out last night. Smoke Ludwig leads us off. What you got, buddy?
You know, it's always cool to see a second-generation basketball player go into the NBA just like his dad did, and that's what Kenyon Martin Jr. did last night. The son of Kmart got drafted by the Sacramento Kings with the 52nd pick, and of course, photos surfaced across Twitter just showing what he was doing as a kid with on his dad's lap in a press conference. Pretty awesome to see that he's going into the NBA as well.
I love that. Coach Matt Daugherty, who balled out last night?
I think Patrick Williams, West Charlotte local product from Florida State, six-man, humble, great story about working for his mother's flower shop. He's been one of my favorite players this past year because he can do everything. He can pass, handle, and shoot, speed, quickness, size. I think he has a chance out of the outside three to be the best player in the draft.
I like that. I want to talk more about that in a second. I'll go with Dwayne Eskridge. Who? Well, you might not know Dwayne Eskridge. He is a senior wide receiver for the Western Michigan Broncos. All 5'9", 190 pounds of him last night. Wednesday night action, college football. Now, Dwayne Eskridge only had four catches last night in that Western Michigan win over Central Michigan, but it just so happened that three of his four catches went for touchdowns. Four catches, 212 yards receiving, and three touchdowns along of 85, an 85-yard touchdown reception in that win over Central Michigan. And that was a game where we were expecting a lot more defense, at least from the chips. Instead, we got a ridiculous shootout, 52-44. The under didn't hit for us. But Dwayne Eskridge balled out, four catches, 212 yards, three touchdowns as the Broncos get the win over the Chippewas. And that is who balled out. 704-570-9610, Asa Abloy phone lines, Building Center text line. Find me on Twitter at Kyle Bailey Club. It's at Kyle Bailey, C-L-U-B. And you can follow this guy on Twitter as well, at Daugherty Matt. It's Matt Daugherty, Coach Matt Daugherty, ACC Network analyst, longtime Tar Heel. He was a former head coach, national champion, and spent some time with the Pacers. His expertise is really coming in handy this morning as we react to the NBA draft last night. And look, at the very least, with the LaMelo Ball draft last night or the selection, we may finally get to see whether or not LaVar Ball could actually take Michael Jordan in a game of one-on-one, Coach.
I would love to be present for the first LaVar Ball-Michael Jordan exchange.
Yeah.
Knowing Michael like I do, you know, LaVar's a bully, right? So what happens when you bullies? You attack them and they just kind of crawl away. Michael is going to probably go, it may not need to say much, maybe just a good firm handshake or just like, LaVar, really? You know, just... you know, something along those lines, just put him in his place, and I'd love to see him cow down a little bit.
You have to wonder, last night the reports emerged, I think it was maybe originally from Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer, that you know the Michael Jordan seal of approval had been given to draft LaMelo Ball. Makes you wonder if there might have been a pre-draft conversation between MJ and LaVar. I don't know what you thought about it. I had some texters, listeners point this out earlier in the show, you know, saying, hey, KB, what'd you think about LaVar's reaction last night when the Hornets selected LaMelo? He seemed pretty... kind of low-key about it. No big reaction. And you know, some folks wondering if he was disappointed about where LaMelo ended up. I just think
that guy has had a dose of humble pie and has kind of taken a back seat. I think his kids have put him in his place a little bit. I think he realized he's ridiculous, over the top. And he needs to just chill and let his sons be out front and just kind of sit back and be quiet.
I think you're right. I think he's been humbled maybe in certain ways. I think the guy was a media creation as much as anything early on. He does, however, now he can lay claim to having two of his three sons drafted second and third overall in the NBA draft, and a third son who's playing for the Oklahoma City Blue, I believe, is their G League affiliate out there in OKC. So he's done some things right. There's no question about that.
One thing he hasn't done right is get those kids with proper shooting form. I'm like, it always amazed me when I was coaching and I'd coach a, you know, or see a kid whose dad was a coach and the kid had terrible form. And I'd be like, man, how did your dad let you out of the house with that jump shot? And I see, you know, Lonzo shooting over his left ear and with his right elbow flying. And you see LaMelo with his elbows flying, kind of like Reggie Miller. There's not many good shooters that shot that way. Bob McAdoo, Reggie Miller are only, the only two that come to mind.
I would add me to that list as well.
Yeah, whatever. So it's like, come on, man. Like, you know, like control what you can control. You can control your kid's shooting form. Like get a shooting coach or, you know, somebody to teach these kids how to shoot with proper technique, because that has really retarded Lonzo's progress as an NBA player. And it's the biggest question mark of LaMelo Ball right now.
It is. And I think that, like you and I've talked about, mechanically speaking, the concerns over LaMelo shooting the basketball are a whole lot less about mechanics, you know, and about the fundamentals of the jump shot. Well, they're about that, you know, but it's more about shot selection and efficiency, you know, and tweaking some things. You and I both tend to agree, and you have far more expertise on this than I do, that there's a lot more to work with LaMelo when it comes to shooting the basketball. Chad texted us a little while ago and said, it's hilarious to hear all the Melo pick praise and none of it has to do with the game of basketball. I laugh, but that's really not true. You know, because you talked about the defense, which has been pointed out mm-hmm. as a concern, that you turn on the tape, sometimes the defensive effort's not consistent.
Right.
That's concerning, A, but at the same time, B, that is something that can be fixed and that you would expect to be fixed for a guy who is committing himself to being a pro at the NBA level. And so at that point, the court vision's elite. Mm-hmm. He passes the ball like he's a Harlem Globetrotter. Mm-hmm. He's got great court vision. You know, he can rifle one-handed passes. Yeah,
you can't teach that.
You can't teach that. And he's a natural. He's so good, you know, in the limited times that I've seen him playing with a competent big, you know, and throwing lobs to the rim and putting bigs in a position around the bucket to finish and to mm-hmm. score. Those things are innate and really, really valuable.
Yeah, no, he you can't teach feel. I've tried. And that is why I have a head of gray hair. You can't teach feel. You can't teach vision. You can teach proper shooting technique, and you can teach defensive positioning and things like that. The key, though, he's got to want to do that. And if he's got any competitiveness in him, like LeBron was a terrible defender when he first got in the NBA, because in high school you don't have to be. You know, I mean, you just try to go for a steal or you try to block a shot at the rim. And, you know, I've been watching tape on LaMelo since this morning on the computer. And, you know, defensively, he's standing up straight. He's reaching around for steals. You don't have to, because in high school, you're just so much better. In the pros, you're going to get exposed. And now all of a sudden, you better get in a defensive stance and show you care, because otherwise you're going to get called out by, you know, Kenny Smith and Charles Barkley on Thursday night TNT.
Yes, absolutely right. Absolutely right. Keep sending us your thoughts. 704-570-9610. Asa Abloy phone lines, Building Center text line, and find me on Twitter at Kyle Bailey Club. We are 10 minutes away. Coming up in almost exactly 10 minutes from now, we'll be joined by Mitch Kupchak, the president of basketball operations, general manager of your Charlotte Hornets. He was, you know, had his hand on the steering wheel last night, guiding the Hornets through last night's NBA draft. We'll try to get Mitch to, you know, spill the beans and tell us exactly how things went down last night in the lead up to the third overall pick. And of course, their selections of Vernon Carey, big man from Duke, Grant Riller, a really, really good shooting guard from the College of Charleston with the 56th pick, and then dealing a future second rounder to New Orleans in exchange for 6'11 Nick Richards, a three-year player for John Calipari at Kentucky. So we'll talk about all that with Mitch in 10 minutes. So I brought up Patrick Williams for two reasons. First of all, it was really cool to see the Charlotte Hornets pick at three and then see a Charlotte native picked mm-hmm. at four. Patrick Williams spent a year under Leonard Hamilton at Florida State. Came off the bench, you know, for the better part of that season.
Right.
But, you know, his draft stock skyrocketed. He ended up fourth. Great little feature on him. His mother last night, who owns a local
flat.
That was so cool.
I love it because, you know, to me, you don't get this. To me, the personality of a young man is really going to help, you know, determine his future. And he's got a personality. I didn't see that. He's got a strong mother, which is important. He understands, like, he had to work. You know, he had to deliver flowers. He understands. He's going to be, you know, like, I think he's going to show up on time with a care factor. And that sounds very basic, but there's a lot of guys that don't show up on time with a high care factor. And I talked about high care factor a lot when with the Pacers, because when you're getting paid that kind of money, what kind of care factor do you have to get out of bed and show up, to go lift weights, to go work on your game, to follow a scouting report when you're making more money than the head coach? You can become moody. And so someone once told me, like, what do people do when they – what are they first thing they say when they hit the lottery? I'm quitting my job.
Right.
Well, there are 12 guys on a roster that have hit the lottery.
Yeah.
Which one of those guys are not going to quit their job?
Love that. I really do. And to extend the point about Charlotte, right? Charlotte picked at 3. Charlotte native at 4. Sadiq Bey, you know, who was drafted later in the first round. They were talking about his upbringing in Charlotte. Charlotte was well represented in that draft last night. And I bring that up to say, because Rod texted in to say, can we stop saying Charlotte is a small market? That is a narrative, a mindset that's not going to go away overnight. But, Rod, you're absolutely right. You're 100% right about that. And we were talking about that in the context of LeVar Ball's reaction to LaMelo coming to Charlotte, you know, as opposed to maybe Golden State. Charlotte's not a small market anymore. That's a narrative that persists. It's not a big market in the way that – hold on. Let me clarify. It's not New York. It's not L.A. It's not Chicago. But you look at the way this city has taken off in the past 5 to 10 years – it's not that it's on par with those cities historically, you know, or in the same ways that you compare media markets, but this is a growth market with a lot of big players and a lot of opportunities. I think you're right about the narrative of Charlotte, but from a sports perspective, it's going to take a deep playoff run, an Eastern Conference championship, some things like that to really completely dispel, you know, that label on Charlotte, Rod, and I'm glad you brought that up. We got to step aside. When we do, when we come back, we are expecting to be joined by the GM of your Charlotte Hornets. Mitch Kupchak joins us next. Did they just take the best player available as LaMelo fell to them? Was that the plan all along? We'll try to get Mitch to tell us next here in the clubhouse on Sports Radio FNZ.